And welcome back into the Tuesday Morning Blitz on Game Day SportsRadio.com. The outfield bringing us back into this segment. The Morning Blitz sponsored by Firehouse Subs, over 1,000 locations nationwide. Firehouse Subs, the hero of all subs. And, of course, Mike Bernard is still with us. Mike, thanks for getting into that last segment there with Scott Singer. That was a lot of fun talking about graduate transfers and transfers, considering what's going on at Clemson or went on at Clemson with Kelly Bryant.
Yeah, and as we looked into it, a lot was revealed about how many kids actually transfer and a lot of the history of it. That was interesting.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Also, before we get into the segment, NFL recap, I want to remind everyone that Mike's segment, sponsored by State Farm Insurance, Auto Home Life Property, and many other products to make your life go right. Call or visit your local State Farm agent to find out how State Farm can help you. In the Birmingham, Alabama market, contact Larry McIntosh at 205-663-3119. Located at 2685 Pelham Parkway, Larry and his staff are ready to serve you and your family. Contact Larry today at 205-663-3119 and get State Farm on your team. State Farm Insurance, here to help life go right. Let's get in right into the NFL recaps of some select games from this past weekend and last night's Monday night game between the Chiefs and the Broncos. Atlanta, Cincinnati 37, Atlanta 36. Mike, late in the fourth quarter, around the four-minute mark, you know, Atlanta, they had some decisions to make with the clock, and, you know, at least they could have made the Bengals use some timeouts. But, you know, explain why you think Dan Quinn did what he did.
Well, I don't know. There's an old coaching mindset that you don't take points off the board, but the game has changed immensely. And we saw Atlanta lose a Super Bowl by not managing the end of a game. And this game here, they should have taken the field goal off the board. They were up 33-31. The field goal made them up 5, which is, of course, more than a field goal, but not a touchdown. But more importantly, they had a first down, so they could have made, as you said, made the Bengals exhaust all their timeouts, maybe get it down closer to the 2-minute warning, and then kick the field goal. And I just think it was, poor management.
And also, you know, again, you never know what could have happened, but they could have actually ended up icing the game with a touchdown.
Sure. If you get down to third down, and on third down you get a penalty that comes with an automatic first down, or you get the first down, and the Bengals are out of timeouts, because in the NFL, once you get to that 2-minute warning and the trailing team has no timeouts, it's over. You take a knee.
And you talk about penalties, and I'll just use this term, nitpicky, or as sensitive as they're being about roughing the passer. And, of course, you know, there's just the NFL to me this year has turned into, let's see where the next flag is coming from. And, again, and all that factors in to your game planning and game-type situation as far as execution. But one thing that has not changed with the penalties, like you and I talk about all the time, is clock management.
That's right. It's basically simple math, understanding of how to finish a game, the last 4 minutes, and, of course, the last 2 minutes. It's not that hard, but it seems to be for a lot of coaches. But, you know, in this game, the Falcons, they're in trouble. They've lost 2 straight at home. The Bengals, of course, win this game, and they cover because they were an underdog. And that game sailed over 53, so it went over the total. But, Coach, the Falcons, they're in last place in the NFC South.
Mike, I'm going to give you a tidbit here. I bet even you guys out there in Vegas haven't come up with yet. Since 1940, teams that score 36 or more points at home and have 0 turnovers are 402-4. In other words, they've won 402 times and they've lost only 4. So basically, in a nutshell, in the last 78 years, only two teams have done that and lost. Until the past 2 weeks, because the Falcons now have done it for two straight weeks. And Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan, he is the first player in NFL history to lose back-to-back games with 350-plus yards passing, three passing touchdowns per game, and zero interceptions. So at least the Falcons are making history.
Well, they're making history, and the offense looks great. I mean, the rookie wide receiver, Calvin Ridley, and he's got great weapons on the outside. I don't know. They can't finish, and it may be too late. I know it's early, but they're in last place in the NFC South, and they have an uphill climb.
And Sark took a lot of heat last year for the offense, a lot of heat last year. You can't blame the Falcons' losses this year on the offense.
No, you can't. And to be honest with you, I can't put a finger on it. It's just like they don't have that it factor this year of how to finish a game. They have the players that have the it factor, as you talked about, Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Ridley, defensive players that are solid. But they're not putting it all together.
Oakland 42, my Brownie, or excuse me, Oakland 45, my Brownies 42. Gruden's first win since returning to the sideline. Oakland tied the game late in the fourth quarter, inside of a minute, with a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. Won in overtime with the field goal with only a minute and 46. This game just tore my heart out. As you know, I love my Brownies, and it tore my heart out. I thought we were actually going to pick up the second win of the season.
Yeah, and that controversial call on the reversal on the spot.
Don't even mention that.
Okay. Well,
go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. Normally that's a play that stands because it didn't seem like it was overwhelming evidence.
I agree with you. I mean, I still don't see it. I totally do not see that, because I thought that the guidelines were indisputable video evidence. I didn't see anything there that caused, oh, well, there's no doubt he didn't make it.
Yeah, I didn't either. And you know, that's a tough break. And the Browns could be undefeated. And I know woulda, coulda, shoulda. I get it. Especially in my world, woulda, coulda means nothing. It means you throw your ticket in the garbage. But look, the Browns have played well enough to win each and every game. They've been up and most of their games by double digits. So they could be undefeated. But I like their attitude. I like where they're going. But Coach, I'm gonna say some things a lot of people aren't going to like. Some people may not care, but you mentioned Gruden gets his first win in this comeback campaign. I still believe he's stuck between broadcast mode and coaching mode, and many of my colleagues in Vegas, including myself, we rate him in the bottom third of the league in coaching right now.
And I really don't think that this is going to last very long, to be honest with you. I think he – and it may be after 1 year. I don't really think it will be. I think it'll probably be 3 to 4 years. But I see him exiting coaching and getting back into his life that he really loved and enjoyed and was a perfect fit for.
I thought he was. I mean, he was the a great analyst, and he had the insight, the experience, the knowledge that was – in some ways unprecedented, and he did a great job. You could tell he really enjoyed his job. And Coach, you spent many years coaching, but when you coach, it basically consumes you. It's everything in your world is about coaching, and you have a strict regiment. And I think he took the money, he took the challenge to come back, but I agree with you. I think his real calling at this stage in his life is in the broadcast booth.
And I will include myself in this. Very few coaches know when it's certainly time to walk away, when you become coach. That's who you are. because, you know, even today, I haven't coached a game on the sideline in over 10 years. But yet, still at some point in every single day, unless I'm in the house by myself, somebody calls me coach. I go to the grocery store. I say, hey, coach, how you doing? I ain't coached a game in over 10 years. Not one.
Yeah, and that's who you become, and it takes away in some sense from your role as a husband, a partner, a father, a friend, a son. I mean, mm-hmm. it's very time consuming, and mentally, over time, it wears you down. We saw Urban Meyer, one of the greatest coaches in college football, when he was at Florida, he had to step away from the game.
Yeah, he had to step away from the game. Also had to step away from Nick Saban there. But anyway, that's another issue. Hey, but getting back to the Browns, Hugh Jackson's future. Now, this is, you know, in my mind, and I'm a Browns fan, and I think we've given Hugh Jackson the benefit of the doubt along the way. And I like Hugh Jackson. I think he's a good coach. Maybe he's just a good position coach. I don't know. But this is a talented team. And not only is it talented, but it's young and talented. I mean, Baker Mayfield, Carlos Hyde, Myles Garrett, Jarvis Landry, Nick Chubb, Jabril Peppers, Antonio Cowell. I could just about name the whole roster. I mean, this is a young, talented team. They need to be winning football games.
Yeah. And, again, as I said, they could easily be undefeated, unbeaten at this point. But here's the thing. You talked about you want to talk about giving plenty of time? I couldn't. This is unprecedented. A coach doesn't go 2 years without winning a game and get another shot. So he's had more than ample time. I think with this team, if he doesn't get to 7-8 wins, I think he should. You know, I think they might let him go.
I think if he's not 500 at mid-year, they let him go mid-season, and they name named Todd Haley acting head coach.
Yeah, well, he's got experience, and he certainly knows the AFC North, and I don't know how I would feel about that. I don't. Again, it goes back to the locker room. What does the locker room think? Now, these are not all kids. Some of these are grown men, but if the locker room is divided on that, then that has to be a part of the equation.
Moving on to the Sunday night game, we had the Ravens 26, the Steelers 14. This game was tied 14 all at the half, but Pittsburgh was held scoreless in the third and fourth quarters. Ravens outgained the Steelers 451 to 284. And I don't think it's just Devontae Bell. I can't put my finger on it right now, but the Steelers have some issues.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell holdout, that's a whole different story. He's losing not only $1 million a game this year, but he can only make 120% of his salary this year for next season. So he's losing another $1.2 million next year. It doesn't make sense. But the Steelers have major, major issues. And, you know, you gave that stat that the Ravens outgained Pittsburgh 451 to 284. Steelers still have offensive weapons. But Mike Tomlin's a defensive guy, and it just has to make his stomach turn that they're getting defeated so badly on defense.
Yeah, it has to. And when you look at the offense, I mean, they're averaging a little over 400 yards per game. But, again, I think the telling sign of this is that they're only averaging 72 yards a game rushing. Now, the Steelers, come on, you're Pittsburgh, you're steel, you're hardcore. Since the Chuck Knoll days, Franco Harris, you Rocky Blyer, you run the football. You're able to run the football. Not only do you run the football, you're able to run the football.
Right, Coach. And even when Todd Haley, who was spreading it out and throwing it around, they still had a great run game, and the run game complemented, you know, the passing game and the great wideout. And, of course, you got Big Ben back there slinging it. But, right, I think it's about mindset. I think it's changed. I think a lot of the older players, when I see a lot of those older players that were leaders, they're gone. They're retired. They've moved on. And I think it's starting to show.
I'm in agreement with you there. I think the locker room chemistry is just not what it used to be. And again, this comes from inside those walls. You would think that Big Ben would be your leader. He's your quarterback. He's really the face of your franchise. But according to folks inside those walls, he's really not the type of leader that's going to gather everyone up and say, jump on my back and follow me. Now, he's tough as nails. He's going to do whatever that he has to do to perform. But at the same time, there's a difference. There are different types of leadership, and you've got to have all of them on a football team to be successful. And very rarely do you have that one person who can fill all those roles. And so I'm saying all that to say, I think it's, and for anyone who would try to blame Big Ben totally, I think that's unfair.
Oh, I do too. And I think Big Ben's tried to step up into that role, and there's no one. It's not possible. Mm-hmm. You have too many. Look at what Antonio Brown's doing. Divisive things that put himself above the team, the social media, the tweets, and so forth. Those are all distractions that a team that's already struggling, they don't need. And I think the fact, some people say, Big Ben, he's not leading right now. They see apathy and indifference and so on. Well, I think he's tried that. And if people aren't going to follow, you just have to do your job. That's my opinion.
And that's not his role. That's not his, when I say it's not his role, that's not the type of leadership that he has. And it's just it comes with, we talk about coaching fit all the time. With teams, you have leadership fit. And I guarantee you, Greg Lloyd, everybody remembers him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I guarantee you, if this was going on and Greg Lloyd was still on the team, he would be walking up and he would be grabbing some people by the neck and saying, hey, we don't do that around here. You know, you take that phone and you put it in your pocket. But that's not been Big Ben's personality. And you have to be yourself. Again, bottom line, lot of problems within that line. It's not field issues that's causing them to be ineffective on the field. It's locker room issues.
It really is. And as far as the point spread, the Steelers have covered 2 of their last 10 games. Even when they're in the friendly home field, they've covered 1 of their last 7 home games. They're underperforming each and every week, both straight up and against the number. And right now, they're tied for last place in the AFC North with Cleveland, and they are truly tied because I don't know what the next tiebreaker is, but remember, they tied. So there's not a head-to-head tiebreaker at this point.
Well, one team that's not in last place right now, tied with anybody, the Chiefs, Andy Reid, I think he's finally got the formula that he's been looking for in Kansas City. Last night against the Broncos, Patrick Mahomes, 28 of 45 for 304 yards, a touchdown, no picks. But more importantly, in the fourth quarter, down by 10, 13 of 16 passing for 151 yards, had a 2-yard touchdown pass to Travis Kelce. And did you see the left-handed throw when Von Miller's chasing him down on a 3rd-and-5 play to Tyreek Hill? That was unbelievable.
Yeah, I think I saw an interview Mahomes did after the game, and he said, yeah, you know, I couldn't get it out with my right hand, so I threw it 6 yards. Well, I went back and watched it again. He actually threw it like 10 or 11 yards. It was pretty impressive because I know it was improvised, and he got a lot of comparisons to Favre from, you know, being a gunslinger and taking chances. He played against a really good defense. Now, the Broncos aren't a great team as of today, but their defense is still solid, and the defense held him in check for basically 3 quarters. But when it came down to the end of the game and his team needed a comeback, the kid, he's slinging it around everywhere. He's got great weapons. And the Chiefs may be able to just outscore most every team, even if they have an off night defensively.
The Chiefs, again, I did not mention the score. Let me mention that 27-23 Chiefs over the Broncos. One point of contention that the Broncos have this morning, we actually had it last night as soon as the game was over, was the officials missing a delay a game call. And first of all, you have to understand, when people see zero, the officials have they have mechanics that they use on the field, and there is an official that's responsible for delay a game. And he's watching the clock in the opposite end zone, and when he sees zero, then he looks toward the ball. Because now remember, like the shot clock in basketball, you can have less than 1 second. And when that clock goes to zero, the play clock goes to zero, there's still a second there. And so the official sees zero, then takes his eyes to the center, and if in his estimation the ball was moving, there is no delay of game. So, and even if they had given them the delay of game, and that's one of those things where, you know, you can't review it and you really can't dispute it, but I don't even think that would have mattered. I think Mahomes would have made a play, and they were second and 27 and he brings them back.
Yeah, he had first and 30 at one point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to say that sour grapes, but I understand that rule, and I've heard it explained by the NFL rules experts that you're exactly right, that they're not sitting there saying, oh, okay, get to one. Look, if it's – because like you're saying, it might have been 0.4 seconds. Mm-hmm. So that's why they say you don't throw the flag exactly when it gets to zero. So there's a little leeway there, but that's a little bit of sour grapes. But Coach, I want to bring up something about this game. We previewed it on Friday, which of course is 3 days before the game starts. Well, the line was 5 or 5, anywhere from 4.5 to 5.5. Well, on Sunday morning, the line was 3 or 3.5. And for people that don't understand when I talk about value in points, because there's not a premium on points in college football today, but in the NFL there is. You notice the point spread difference, right? They won by 4, and it wasn't easy getting there, but they landed right in between those two numbers. So that's why you have to be very careful and make sure you get value on the line.
We appreciate you being with us on this NFL recap for Tuesday Morning Blitz. Again, Morning Blitz sponsored by Firehouse Subs, over 1,000 locations nationwide. Firehouse Subs, the hero of all subs. And Mike, we will be back with you again in a couple of days when we start previewing NFL and college games for this coming weekend. Anything jump out at you right now?
Well, Thursday night, you and I will go over and preview the Colts at the Patriots. Patriots got off the schneid. And then on Saturday, there's a ton of games. We've got the Red River Shootout. You've got LSU at Florida, Seminoles and Hurricanes, Notre Dame at Virginia Tech. And look, I'm going to tell you, Coach, I think Notre Dame's really good. But this Virginia Tech team, sure, they lost to Old Dominion. But the point spread in this game opened Notre Dame 1.5, and it went up to 5. But even if it were to open at 5, they're less than a touchdown favorite. Everyone has Notre Dame's path to the playoff all mapped out, and they're not a huge favorite in this game.
No, and they lost their outstanding linebacker, Oates. They lost him for the year, so that's going to affect them too.
Yeah, and then another game, of course, we'll look at Auburn at Mississippi State. I think the early line had the Tigers -3 or so. So there's a lot of good games to go over.
Everybody's dumping on Mississippi State right now because of the loss to Kentucky and the loss to Florida. I think those two games, and I've said this to you before, I think those two games say more about Kentucky and Florida than they do bad about Mississippi State.
Agreed, and the one loss that Florida has was to Kentucky. Kentucky's better. Now, we don't know how Kentucky's going to handle the pressure from here on out, mm-hmm. especially the pressure of November, mm-hmm. if they are in a position to handle pressure then, but because they haven't been there. I mean, tell it like it is. But Florida, a lot of the Florida players have been there. Some of those players played in the SEC title games a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. Kentucky and Florida, two good teams. The problem with Mississippi State is no matter how good those two teams are, their offense has been woeful in those games.
They have been. And, again, both of those teams, Mark Stoops, obviously, great defensive mind. Todd Grantham, great defensive mind. We're going to find out a lot about Kentucky when they go out to College Station on Saturday. Mike, we will talk with you again on Thursday. Appreciate your time as always. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Tuesday Morning Blitz, GameDaySportsRadio.com.